Hi, Dave Emery here. This is, for the record, program number 1104. Fascism, 2019 World Tour, Part 14. Lithium coup in Bolivia, Part 1. This is being recorded on December 17th of the year 2019. How time flies when you are having fun. Once again, and to an even greater extent than when I recorded the beginning of our last show, the title somewhat grimly and ironically titled Fascism 2019 World Tour is indeed turning into something of a fascist world tour, with networking manifestations in various countries. We're going to be taking a look in our next two shows at a coup d'etat in Bolivia that ousted Evo Morales, that country's first indigenous leader, although he had taken liberties, shall we say, with the Constitution and its limitations on the number of terms that he can serve. He had, by all accounts, well, by most honest accounts, done a great deal of good for that largely impoverished country and its indigenous population as well. In doing so, he followed a blueprint that has been followed in many third world countries that have been wrestling with post-colonial corporate imperialism, to coin a term. He nationalized a great many businesses that had previously been exploited for the benefit of a domestic elite in partnership with various transnational corporations. Predictably, he ran afoul of that elite and the transnational corporations with whom they worked. And ultimately, those elements successfully conspired in a coup against him. What we're going to be looking at in this program is not just the goings-on in Bolivia per se, but the extent to which those goings-on are part and parcel to a global manifestation of international fascist networking in which European fascists are networking with Latin American fascists and elements of U.S. intelligence in a way that is quite resonant with Operation Condor, a CIA-assisted international assassination consortium composed of various Latin American countries in the 1970s and early 1980s. We talked about that at great length in, among other shows, AFA program number 19, available on the SpitfireList.com website. Not only have other right-wing regimes in Latin America collaborated with the individuals and institutions behind the Bolivian coup, but also they have networked in so doing with European fascists as well. Vatican deep politics as relates to to international fascism and the Bolivian coup will also come into play. We're going to revisit the Opus Dei organization quickly, and also fascist Vatican politics in the Balkans and Croatia as well. To be noted in this is the decisive position of Bolivia in the global lithium trade. Lithium is fundamental for the production of batteries for electric cars, and as such looms very large on the economic horizon. Once again, we are going to be taking a look at what I believe is a full-court press against China. China had been working to access Bolivia's lithium reserves and doing so in a way that reportedly would have been of greater benefit to the people in the vicinity of those reserves than the plans developed by various international interests, including German. A German firm, heavily assisted, by the way, by the German government, had contracted to exploit Bolivia's lithium reserves. However, the Morales government lobbied against them, ultimately obliged the cancellation of the contract between Bolivia and the German firm, the state assisted German firm to exploit develop Bolivia's lithium resources. The Chinese interests were working to develop those lithium reserves again in a manner that reportedly was more rewarding of locals in the community in which the lithium reserves are held than the German firm, the German plan, I should say. However, Morales's ouster is going to change that. We're also going to take a look, probably in our next show, at Elon Musk, the South African-born scion of Tesla Motors. Tesla is heavily dependent on lithium for its car batteries. And interestingly enough, the South African-born Elon Musk is going to be locating a new factory for building Teslas in Germany, of all places, where any successful development of Bolivian lithium. By some accounts, Bolivia has 70% of the world's lithium resources. Elon Musk's decampment or relocation of that factory to Germany will in all likelihood be able to take good advantage of the Bolivian lithium reserves. In our last show, we concluded with a look at China's role as a world leader in various green technologies, including electric vehicles that will loom that will figure into the discussion here, probably not until the next show. Before we get into the Bolivian lithium coup per se, I spent part of last week's show discussing the Cambridge Analytica affair and speculating about how the insurgency building techniques using social media that were exploited by Christopher Wiley and the SCL firm and Cambridge Analytica in their gaming of not only the 2016 U.S. election, but the Brexit situation as well. I speculated about the possibility of that perhaps being used in Hong Kong to help develop the Hong Kong turmoil. My thinking in that regard was that Steve Bannon is at the epicenter of the anti-China effort. Pepe the Frog turned up as an iconic focal point of the turmoil in Hong Kong. I had forgotten about something, and that lends further gravitas to the at this point, still speculative consideration of the possibility of a Cambridge Analytica social media psyop in Hong Kong. And I had forgotten that Cambridge Analytica has basically been reborn. A British-based firm called Emerdata, capital E-M-E-R-D-A-T-A, has come into existence, and it appears to be a merging of Cambridge Analytica and the SCL British firm that had been engaged in counterinsurgency research or PSYOPs in Afghanistan, among other places. That firm has basically resuscitated the Cambridge Analytica operational infrastructure. And interestingly enough, the directors of Emmer Data include a guy named Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, Co, capital K-O, capital C-H-U-N, capital S-H-U-N, Johnson, Co Chun Shun. He is a Hong Kong financier and a business partner of none other than Eric Prince, the head of the private intelligence and paramilitary firm that used to be called Blackwater, and the brother, by the way, of Donald Trump's education secretary, Betsy DeVos. From a New York Times story that will be linked in the description for this show and was in the last show. But the company's, that is to say Emmer Data, but the company's announcement left several questions unanswered, including who would retain the company's intellectual property, the so-called psychographic voter profiles built in part with data from Facebook, and whether Cambridge Analytica's data mining business would return under new auspices. In recent months, executives at Cambridge Analytica and SCL Group, along with the Mercer family, by the way, who were heavily networked with Steve Bannon, at the epicenter of the anti-China effort, continuing, have moved to create a new firm, Emmer Data, capital E-M-E-R-D-A-T-A, based in Britain, according to British records. The new company's directors include Johnson, Co Chun Shun, a Hong Kong financier and business partner of Eric Prince, an executive and a part owner of SCL Group, Nigel Oakes, O-A-K-E-S, has publicly described Emmer Data as a way of rolling up the two companies under one new banner. About the two companies being Cambridge Analytica and SCL Group. So it has been reborn. It is in Britain, Hong Kong, a former British colony. And one of its directors is a Hong Kong financier who is a business director, who is a business partner of Eric Prince of Blackwater and the brother of Betsy DeVos. So I think the possibility that a Cambridge Analytica, or perhaps in this case Emmer Data / SCL social media psyop may have contributed to the situation in Hong Kong is certainly something to bear in mind. I think it looms larger and more probable. Again, noting the techniques used for the building of the Cambridge Analytica psyops, as set forward by Christopher Wiley, and those are were read into the record and reprinted in the description for the record 1103. Before leaving that, and we will be coming back to China and its role as a leader in green technology. Just imagine, I continue to be struck by the newspeak that affects this country, the disturbances in Hong Kong, which have, by the way, pushed the Hong Kong economy into recession, are being described as pro-democracy protests or in those kinds of terms. Just imagine if the shoe were on the other foot. The National Endowment for Democracy, a cutout for U.S. intelligence, founded in the early 80s by then CIA Director William Casey and Alan Weinstein, among others, was described by Alan Weinstein in a Washington Post interview as, quote, doing the same thing that the CIA used to do clandestinely 25 years ago, and that was in the early 1980s. The NED, as a matter of record, has financed individuals and institutions who are at the forefront of the turmoil in Hong Kong. Its leaders have met with various U.S. political figures, including Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State and former CIA Director Mike Pompeo. Just imagine if the shoe were on the other foot. Imagine if a Chinese soft power slash intel cutout firm were helping to finance an American protest movement, say Black Lives Matter, or what have you, the Occupy Wall Street, or something along those lines. Imagine if the number two guy in China, I don't know who that is, but imagine if he had been meeting personally with some of the leaders of that movement, say Black Lives Matter, and suppose the Chinese foreign minister, the equivalent of Mike Pompeo, were meeting with some of those organizers as well. Then suppose that organization was conducting street manifestations. I really couldn't call them protests. There were more. Some of them would fit under the rubric of protest, but there was a lot of violence. Suppose that they began throwing Molotov cocktails at cops, shooting arrows, in some cases with flaming tips, at cops, trashing subway stations, derailing subway trains, beating up and in some cases throwing accelerant onto and setting fire to passersby, all the while singing the Chinese national anthem and waving the Chinese flag. They would not be called civil rights demonstrators. They would be described quite accurately as rioters and terrorists, and it might very well lead to the imposition of martial law in areas where such things were taking place. And yet, when the obverse takes place, and we do that in Hong Kong, this is pro-democracy protest. Again, the newspeak is really, really interesting to me and grotesquely funny in a way.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Now, in Bolivia, our 2019, our fascism 2019 world tour goes from Hong Kong and from Europe and Ukraine to Bolivia. As we will see, however, there are many international links. I will talk about some of those. I will summarize this long article I'm going to read into the record and highlight some of the key aspects of it after reading it into the record. Again, there is not only resonance between European and Latin American fascism, but resonance that goes back to the past, and not only to Operation Condor, to Gestapo war criminal Klaus Barbie's sojourn in Bolivia in collaboration with not only elements of U.S. intelligence, but European fascists, including Pierluigi Pagliai of the Propaganda Due Lodge, and also Stefano Della Chiai, one of the main architects of the Strategy of Tension. Again, that is spoken about at great length in AFA number 19. We're going to examine the coup in Bolivia, not only how fascist elements collaborated against the government of Evo Morales, but how they did so in conjunction with not only transnational corporations, but elements of U.S. intelligence as well. Note that right-wing political interests and governments in Colombia, Brazil, and in Venezuela have collaborated with the coup plotters in Bolivia. Actually, I think before getting into reading this, some of the names and institutions of government. Luis Fernando Camacho, a wealthy Bolivian, was one of the people involved in the series of events that resulted in the coup. His family is heavily involved with the Bolivian natural gas business. Some of those operations were nationalized by Evo Morales. He also was heavily networked with the UJC, the Union Juvenil Crucentista, or Santa Cruz Youth Union, which is a fascist paramilitary organization linked not only to violence against would-be reformers, but also that has lent momentum to the secession of the Santa Cruz Bolivia area. It is an explicitly fascist organization, and again, one of the main figures in that is one of the main people figuring in that is Mr. Luis Fernando Camacho. Note that Camacho has been allied with a wealthy Croatian in a Bolivian named Branko Marinović. He has been involved with the secessionist movement in Santa Cruz as well, along with the UJC, and also Mr. Camacho. Note that Mr. Marinković also is of Croatian extraction. There has been speculation about his being of Ustaši genesis. He has denied that, but that remains to something that some observers view as credible. One of the things to note is that the area in Santa Cruz is also a major area of operation for the Bolivian Socialist Falange, which is not socialist at all, but is a fascist group that was allied with Klaus Barbie and was allied with the Bonzer government in Bolivia. Also note that Mr. Marinković was one of the financiers of an earlier attempt to oust Morales. A group of European fascists and Bolivian fascists were busted by security forces plotting to assassinate Evo Morales. There were Hungarian, Croatian, Irish fascists, and also a fellow named Eduardo Rosa Flores, who was affiliated with the Opus Dei organization, a fascist order within the Vatican that emerged under Francisco Franco. And the possibility of Marinković having indeed been of Ustaši origin is lent credibility by the fact that Rosa fought on behalf of the, or with, the Croatian 1st International Platoon in the war that resulted from the breakup of Yugoslavia. The Croatians and the Ustaši there have had strong Vatican support from the post-World War I period right on up through the Cold War and the present. Mr. Marinković was one of the apparent financiers of that coup, and also there was a fellow named Hugo Acha Melgar, who worked with something called the Human Rights Foundation. He was another figure in that assassination plot, that international fascist assassination plot against Morales that was financed in part by Mr. Marinković. And the Human Rights Foundation is anything but. It has been involved in, once again, training some of the people in Hong Kong. And it was financed in part by Peter Thiel. Interestingly enough, a fellow who heads it up is named Thor Halvorsen Jr. That's H-A-L-V-O-R-S-S-E-N, a Scandinavian name, despite the fact that he is of Venezuelan extraction. Also, the elite interests aligned with the transnational corporations, people like Marinković and also Mr. Camacho, had a presidential, a quote Democratic unquote presidential proxy named Carlos Mesa, who was a conservative social Democrat, who was basically tabbed to serve as something of a front man for the corporate interests and their Bolivian domestic elite collaborators. And Mr. Mesa as well has a link to something called the Inter-American Dialogue that is financed in part by the Agency for International Development, or USAID, which, like the National Endowment for Democracy, is basically a U.S. intelligence cutout and soft power vehicle. So those are some of the individuals and institutions and dynamics in this. I will not have time, I don't think, to read the whole article in this show. We will continue in our next program.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
We are now going to read an article by Max Blumenthal and Ben Norton from The Gray Zone of November 11th of 2019. Bolivia coup led by Christian fascist paramilitary leader and multimillionaire with foreign support. When Luis Fernando Camacho stormed into Bolivia's abandoned presidential palace in the hours after President Evo Morales' sudden November 10th resignation, he revealed to the world a side of the country that stood at stark odds with the plurinational spirit its deposed socialist and indigenous leader had put forward. With a Bible in one hand and a national flag in the other, Camacho bowed his head in prayer above the presidential seal, fulfilling his vow to purge his country's native heritage from government and, quote, return God to the burned palace. Pachamama will never return to the palace, he said, referring to the Andean Mother Earth spirit. Bolivia belongs to Christ. Bolivia's extreme right-wing opposition had overthrown leftist President Evo Morales that day, following demands by the country's military leadership that he, meaning Morales, step down. Virtually unknown outside his country, where he had never won a democratic election, Camacho stepped into the void. Camacho is a rich and powerful multimillionaire named in the Panama Papers and an ultra-conservative Christian fundamentalist groomed by a fascist paramilitary notorious for its racist violence with a base in Bolivia's wealthy separatist region of Santa Cruz. Camacho also hails from a family of corporate elites who have long profited from Bolivia's plentiful natural gas reserves. And his family lost part of its wealth when Morales nationalized the nation's resources in order to fund his vast social programs, which cut poverty by 42% and extreme poverty by 60%. In the lead-up to the coup, Camacho met with leaders from far right-wing government. In the lead-up to the coup, Camacho met with leaders from right-wing governments in the region to discuss their plans to destabilize Morales. 2 months before the putsch, he tweeted gratitude. "Thank you, Colombia. Thank you, Venezuela," he explained, tipping his hat to Juan Guaido's coup operation. He also recognized the far-right government of Jair Bolsonaro, declaring, "Thank you, Brazil." Camacho had spent years leading an overtly fascist separatist organization. More about that later. While Camacho and his far-right forces served as the muscle behind the coup, their political allies waited to reap the benefits. The presidential candidate, Bolivia's opposition, had fielded in the October election, Mr. Carlos Mesa, M-E-S-A, is a pro-business, unquote, privatizer with extensive ties to Washington. U.S. government cables published by WikiLeaks reveal that he regularly corresponded with American officials in their efforts to destabilize Morales. Mesa is currently listed as an expert at a D.C.-based think tank funded by the U.S. government's soft power arm, USAID, various oil giants, and a host of multinational corporations active in Latin America. Parenthetically, as we will see later, that's called the Inter-American Dialogue. Continuing. Evo Morales, a former farmer who rose to prominence in social movements before becoming the leader of the powerful grassroots political party Movement Toward Socialism, or MAS, was Bolivia's first indigenous leader. Wildly popular in the country's substantial native and peasant communities, he won numerous elections and democratic referenda over a 13-year period, often in landslides. On October 20th, Morales won re-election by more than 600,000 votes, giving him just above the 10% margin needed to defeat opposition presidential candidate Mesa in the first round. Experts who did a statistical analysis of Bolivia's publicly available voting data found no evidence of irregularities or fraud. But the opposition claimed otherwise and took to the streets in weeks of protests and riots. The events that precipitated the resignation of Morales were indisputably violent. Right-wing opposition gangs attacked numerous elected politicians from the ruling leftist MAS party. They then ransacked the home of President Morales while burning down the houses of several other top officials. The family members of some politicians were kidnapped and held hostage until they resigned. A female socialist mayor was publicly tortured by a mob, by the way, parenthetically, in the article itself, which is reprinted in the written description for the show. There are many links that to various video and things on social media accounts that will supplement the main body of the text of the article. I can't do video on radio, but be aware that those are in the actual article. Continuing. Following the forced departure of Morales, coup leaders arrested the president and vice president of the government's electoral body and forced the organization's other officials to resign. Camacho's followers proceeded to burn Wafala flags, that's W-I-P-H-A-L-A, that symbolized the country's indigenous population and the plurinational vision of Morales. The Organization of American States, a pro-U.S. organization founded by Washington during the Cold War as an alliance of right-wing anti-communist countries in Latin America, helped rubber stamp the Bolivian coup. It called for new elections, claiming there were numerous irregularities in the October 20th vote, without citing any evidence. Then the OAS remained silent as Morales was overthrown by his military and his party's officials were attacked and violently forced to resign. The day after, the Donald Trump White House enthusiastically praised the coup, trumpeting it as a, quote, significant moment for democracy, unquote, and a, quote, strong signal to the illegitimate regimes in Venezuela and Nicaragua. Emerging from the shadows to lead a violent, far-right putsch, while Carlos Mesa timidly condemned the opposition's violence, Camacho egged it on, ignoring calls for an international audit of the election and emphasizing his maximalist demand to purge all supporters of Morales from the government. He was the true face of the opposition, concealed for months behind the moderate figure of Mesa. A 40-year-old multimillionaire businessman from the separatist stronghold of Santa Cruz, Camacho had never run for office. Like Venezuelan coup leader Juan Guaido, who more than 80% of Venezuelans had never heard of until the U.S. government anointed him as supposed president, unquote, Camacho was an obscure figure until the coup attempt in Bolivia hit its stride. He first created his Twitter account on May 27th of 2019. For months, his tweets went ignored, generating no more than 3 or 4 retweets and likes. Before the election, Camacho did not have a Wikipedia article, and there were few media profiles on him in Spanish or English language media. Camacho issued a call for a strike on July 9th, posting videos on Twitter that got just over 20 views. The goal of the strike was to try to force the resignation of the Bolivian government's electoral organ, the Supreme Electoral Tribunal, or TSE. In other words, Camacho was pressuring the government's electoral authorities to step down more than 3 months before the presidential election. It was not, one more time, this last sentence. In other words, Camacho was pressuring the government's electoral authorities to step down more than 3 months before the presidential election. It was not until after the election that Camacho was thrust into the limelight and transformed into a celebrity by corporate media conglomerates like the local right-wing network Unitel, Telemundo, and CNN en Español. All of a sudden, Camacho's tweets calling for Morales to resign were lighting up with thousands of retweets. The coup machinery had been activated. Mainstream outlets like the New York Times and Reuters, followed by anointing the unelected Camacho as the, quote, leader, unquote, of Bolivia's opposition. But even as he lapped up international attention, key portions of the far-right activists' background were omitted. Left unmentioned were Camacho's deep and well-established connections to Christian extremist paramilitaries notorious for racist violence and local business cartels, as well as the right-wing governments across the region. It was the fascist paramilitaries and separatist atmosphere of Santa Cruz, where Camacho's politics were formed and where his ideological contours of the coup have been defined. Cadre of a Francoist-style fascist paramilitary, Luis Fernando Camacho was groomed by the Unión Juvenil Cruzanista, the Cruzanista, or Santa Cruz Youth Union, or UJC, a fascist paramilitary organization that has been linked to assassination plots against Morales. The group is notorious for assaulting leftists, indigenous peasants, and journalists, all the while espousing a deeply racist, homophobic ideology. Since Morales entered office in 2006, the UJC has campaigned to separate from a country its members believed had been overtaken by a satanic indigenous mass. The UJC is the Bolivian equivalent of Spain's Falange, India's Hindu supremacist RSS, and Ukraine's neo-Nazi Azov Battalion. Its symbol is a green cross that bears strong similarities to logos of fascist movements across the West, and its members are known to launch into Nazi-style Sieg Heil salutes. Even the U.S. Embassy in Bolivia has described UJC members as racist and militant, noting that they, quote, have frequently attacked pro-MAS government people and installations. After journalist Benjamin Bangl, B-A-N-G-L, visited with UJC members in 2007, he described them as the, quote, brass knuckles, unquote, of the Santa Cruz separatist movement. Quote, the Union Juvenil, or Juvenil actually in Spanish, has been known to beat up and whip campesinos marching for gas nationalization, threw rocks at students organizing against autonomy, tossed Molotov cocktails at the state television station, and brutally assault members of the landless movement struggling against land monopolies, unquote, Bangl wrote. Quote, when we have to defend our culture by force, we will, unquote, a UJC leader told Bangl. Quote, the defense of liberty is more important than life, unquote. Camacho was elected as vice president of the UJC in 2002 when he was just 23 years old. He left the organization 2 years later to help build his family's business empire and rise through the ranks of the pro-Santa Cruz committee. It was in that organization, again, the pro-Santa Cruz committee, that he was taken under the wing of one of the separatist movement's most powerful figures, a Bolivian-Croatian oligarch named Branko Marinković, that's capital B-R-A-N-K-O, capital M-A-R-I-N-K-O-V-I-C. In August, Camacho tweeted a photo with his great friend, unquote, Marinković. This friendship was crucial to establishing the rightist activist's credentials and forging the basis of the coup that would take form 3 months later. Camacho's Croatian godfather and separatist power broker Branko Marinković is a major landowner who ramped up his support for the right-wing opposition after some of his land was nationalized by the Evo Morales government. As chairman of the pro-Santa Cruz committee, he oversaw the operations of the main engine of separatism in Bolivia. In a 2008 letter to Marinković, the International Federation for Human Rights denounced the committee as, quote, an actor and promoter of racism and violence in Bolivia, unquote. The human rights group added that it, quote, condemned the attitude and secessionist, unionist, and racist discourses, as well as the calls of military disobedience, of which the pro-Santa Cruz Civic Committee is one of the main promoters. In 2013, journalist Matt Kennard, capital K-E-N-N-A-R-D, reported that the U.S. government was working closely with the pro-Santa Cruz committee to encourage the balkanization of Bolivia and to undermine Morales. Quote, what they, the U.S., put across was how they could strengthen channels of communication, unquote, the vice president of the committee told Kennard. The embassy said they would help us in our communication work, and they have a series of publications where they were putting forward their ideas, unquote. In a 2008 profile on Marinković, the New York Times acknowledged the extremist undercurrents of the Santa Cruz separatist movement the oligarch presided over. It described the area as, quote, a bastion of openly xenophobic groups like the Bolivian Socialist Falange, whose hand-in-air salute draws inspiration from the fascist Falange of the former Spanish dictator Francisco Franco, unquote. The Bolivian Socialist Falange was a fascist group that provided safe haven to Nazi war criminal Klaus Barbie during the Cold War. A former Gestapo torture expert, Barbie was repurposed by the CIA through its Operation Condor program to help exterminate communism across the continent. And again, talking about Operation Condor and Klaus Barbie, in AFA program number 19, we spoke about his deep links to Italian fascists like Pierluigi Pagliari of the P2 Lodge, and also Stefano Della Chiaia, the architect of the strategy of tension in Italy. His Bridegrooms of Death mercenary group also was financed in part by the CIA and by the Unification Church. We spoke about that in AFA program number 27.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
More about Klaus Barbie and the Bolivian Socialist Falange. The Bolivian Falange came into power in 1971 when its leader, General Hugo Banzer Suarez, ousted the leftist government of General Juan José Torres González. The government of González had infuriated business leaders by nationalizing industries and antagonized Washington by ousting the Peace Corps, which it viewed as an instrument of CIA penetration. The Nixon administration immediately welcomed Banzer with open arms and courted him as a key bulwark against the spread of socialism in the region. An especially ironic 1973 dispatch showing Secretary of State Henry Kissinger thanking Banzer for congratulating him on his Nobel Peace Prize. The movement's Putschist legacy persevered through the Morales era through organizations like the UJC and figures such as Marinkovic and Camacho. The Times noted that Marinkovic also supported the activities of the UJC, describing the fascist group as a, quote, quasi-independent arm of the committee led by Mr. Marinkovic, unquote. A member of the UJC board told the U.S. newspaper of record in an interview, quote, we will protect Bronco with our own lives. Marinkovic has espoused a kind of Christian nationalist rhetoric familiar to the far-right organizations of Santa Cruz, calling, for instance, for a, quote, crusade for the truth, unquote, and insisting that God is on his side. The oligarch's family hails from Croatia, where he has dual citizenship. Marinkovic has long been dogged by rumors that his family members were involved in the country's powerful fascist Ustasha movement. The Ustasha collaborated openly with Nazi Germany occupiers during World War II, apparently they were backed by the Vatican. Their successors returned to power after Croatia declared independence from a former Yugoslavia, a former socialist country that was intentionally balkanized in a NATO war, much in the same way that Marinkovic hoped Bolivia would be. Marinkovic denies that his family was part of the Ustasha. He claimed in an interview with the New York Times that his father fought against the Nazis. But even some of his sympathizers are skeptical. A Balkan analyst from the private intelligence firm Stratfor, which works closely with the U.S. government and is popularly known as the Shadow CIA, unquote, produced a rough background profile on Marinkovich, speculating, quote, "Still don't know his full story, but I would bet a lot of money that this dude's parents are first generation. His name is too Slavic, and that they were Ustashi. That they were Ustashi Reed Nazi sympathizers fleeing Tito's communists after World War II. The Stratfor analyst excerpted a 2006 article by journalist Christian Parenti, who had visited Marinkovich on his ranch in Santa Cruz. Eva Morales' land reform program could lead to civil war, unquote, Marinkovich warned Parenti in the Texas accented English he picked up while studying at the University of Texas, Houston. Today, Marinkovich is an ardent supporter of Brazil's far-right leader Jair Bolsonaro, whose only complaint about Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet was that he, quote, didn't kill enough, unquote. Marinkovich is also a public admirer of Venezuela's far-right opposition. Todos somos Leopoldo, we are all Leopoldo, he tweeted in support of Leopoldo López, who has been involved in numerous coup attempts against Venezuela's leftist government. While Marinkovich denied any role in armed militant activity in his interview with Parenti, he was accused in 2008 of playing a central role in an attempt to assassinate Morales and his Movement Toward Socialism Party allies. He told the New York Times less than 2 years before the plot developed, quote, "If there is no legitimate international mediation in our crisis, there is going to be confrontation," unquote. And unfortunately, it's going to be bloody and painful for all Bolivians, again, unquote. In April of 2009, a special unit of the Bolivian Security Services barged into a luxury hotel room and cut down three men who were said to be involved in a plot to kill Evo Morales. Two others remained on the loose. Four of the alleged conspirators had Hungarian or Croatian roots and ties to rightist politics in Eastern Europe, while another was a right-wing Irishman, Michael Dwyer, who had only arrived in Santa Cruz 6 months before. The ringleader of the group was said to be a former leftist journalist named Eduardo Rosa Flores, R-O-S-Z-A hyphen, capital F-L-O-R-E-S, who had turned to fascism and belonged to Opus Dei, the traditionalist Catholic cult that emerged under the dictatorship of Spain's Francisco Franco. In fact, the code name Rosa Flores assumed in the assassination plot was Franco, unquote, after the late Generalissimo. During the 1990s, Rosa fought on behalf of the Croatian First International Platoon, or the PIV, in the war to separate from Yugoslavia. A Croatian journalist told Time that, quote, "The PIV was a notorious group. 95% of them had criminal histories. Many were part of Nazi and fascist groups from Germany to Ireland." By 2009, Rosa returned home to Bolivia to crusade on behalf of another separatist movement in Santa Cruz. And it was there that he was killed in a luxury hotel with no apparent source of income and a massive stockpile of guns. The government later released photos of Rosa and a co-conspirator posing with their weapons. Publication of emails between the ringleader and István Istvan Belovai, capital Belovai, a former Hungarian military intelligence officer who served as a double agent for the CIA, cemented the perception that Washington had a hand in the operation. Marinkovich was subsequently charged with providing $200,000 for the plotters. The Bolivian-Croatian oligarch initially fled to the U.S., where he was given asylum, then relocated to Brazil, where he lives today. He denied any involvement in the plan to kill Morales. As journalist Matt Kennard reported, there was another thread that tied the plot to the U.S., the alleged participation of an NGO leader named Hugo Acha Mergar, that's capital H-U-G-O, capital A-C-H-A, capital M-E-L-G-A-R. Quote, Rosa didn't come here by himself. They brought him, unquote, the Bolivian government's lead investigator told Kennard. Hugo Acha Mergar brought him. Acha was not just the head of any run-of-the-mill NGO. He had founded a Bolivian subsidiary of the Human Rights Foundation, or HRF, an international right-wing outfit that is known for hosting a, quote, school for revolution, unquote, for activists seeking regime change in states targeted by the U.S. government. HRF is run by four Halverson Jr., that's capital P-H-R, like the Norse god of thunder, Halverson, capital H-A-L-V-O-R-S-S-E-N, Jr., the son of the late Venezuelan oligarch and CIA asset Thor Halverson Helum, H-E-L-L-U-M. The first cousin of the veteran Venezuelan coup plotter Leopoldo Lopez, Halverson was a former college Republican activist who crusaded against political correctness and other familiar right-wing hobgoblins. After a brief career as a firebrand right-wing film producer in which he oversaw a scandalous, quote, anti-environmentalist documentary financed by a mining corporation, Halverson rebranded as a promoter of liberalism and the enemy of global authoritarianism. He launched the HRF with grants from right-wing billionaires like Peter Thiel, conservative foundations, and NGOs, including Amnesty International. The group has since been at the forefront of training activists for insurrectionary activity from Hong Kong to the Middle East to Latin America. Though Acha was granted asylum in the U.S., the HRF has continued pushing regime change in Bolivia. As Wyatt Reed reported for the Gray Zone, HRF Freedom Fellow, unquote, Janice Vaca Dasas, capital J-H-A-N-I-S-S-E, capital V-A-C-A, capital B-A-Z-A, helped trigger the initial stage of the coup by blaming Morales for the Amazon fires that consumed parts of Bolivia in August, mobilizing international protests against him. At the time, Baza posed as an environmental activist, unquote, and student of nonviolence who articulated her concerns in moderate-seeming calls for more international aid to Bolivia. Through her NGO, Rios de Pie, capital R-I-O-S, B-E, capital P-I-E, she helped launch the hashtag SOS Bolivia, which signaled the imminent foreign-backed regime change operation. So again, note the role of social media in this concatenation. By the way, in connection with not only international fascism, as we're talking about Fascism 2019 World Tour, but some of the deep politics of international fascism, there is a book for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website called Falange by Alan Chase. And it talks about the role not only of Spain in international fascism, but the links between the Spanish and Portuguese oligarchies and their corresponding elements in Latin America, because Latin America had been a primarily Spanish but also Portuguese colony, and there are links between the aristocracies of those nations, both in Europe and in Latin America, and the Vatican, and that is one of the things that has one of the fonts that contributed to international fascism. We will continue our program, our discussion in our next broadcast. However, this concludes For the Record program number 1104, Fascism 2019 World Tour Part 14, Lithium Coup in Bolivia Part 1. This is being recorded on December 17th of year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.